Hello and welcome to Automators, the podcast about grabbing technology and bending it to your will so that it does all of your work for you. My name is Rosemary Orchard and I'm joined as always by my pal David Sparks. Hey David, how are you?
Great, Rose. I am looking forward to making a show with you as always. We've got a fun topic today. We thought we'd go through and share some just good personal productivity automations.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that, you know, we kind of had this idea for the show of what we kind of wanted to talk about. And then we kind of looked at what we were going to talk about and went, hang on a minute, there's a theme here. You know, We already had one theme, but it turns out there's two themes. So
we're
getting back to personal productivity with our automations. And yeah, it's going to be fun.
All right. Before we do, however, Rose, you've got some good news to share with us.
Yeah, I do. So Pushcut for Mac is officially in test flight. So for folks who don't know or don't remember, I'm a part of Snaildit Development Limited, and we are, the people currently looking after maintaining and updating Pushcut. And so we've been working really hard on a Mac app. I say we, it's predominantly been David, our developer, and I've just been filing lots of bug reports because that's how you make it better. Do all the weird edge cases. And it's officially in test flight. We're kind of doing a slow release at the moment because we don't want to be overwhelmed with duplicate reports from people. Watch the space. There will be more details available soon. And it's really good. I'm really excited by it, especially because it turns out I use Pushcut a lot. I was using it a lot before we started developing for it, but I'm using it even more now, and it's been really useful for my personal automations as well, David.
Excellent. I can't wait to get in on the beta. I'm a little sad that I haven't seen it yet, but I guess it's just
that's because there are very few people as we record this episode on it, David. I think you're going to be one of the first folks outside of Snaildit who's going to be on it. So you'll be on it, and then we'll get some other folks in as time allows, and so that we can get it out as soon as possible.
Let's just talk about it for a minute though, because Pushcuts solve some unique problems with automation, you know, allowing us to create our own automation server. And I'm not sure everybody understands what that means, so I'd like you to explain that a little bit, and in particular why this is really good news on a Mac, especially for those of us that have a Mac running 24/7.
Well, Pushcut allows you to do a number of things. So, for example, background notifications or background actions. So before, Shortcuts had automations built in, Pushcut already had them. And so it can do things like sense an iBeacon, which is a specific kind of Bluetooth device that basically says, hello, I am very specifically here. So it can do things like sense that, or geographic location with time parameters on it, and use that to trigger automations. And one of the things that those automations can do is run something on your Pushcut automation server. And a Pushcut automation server is, or has until very recently for everybody, been an iPhone or an iPad sitting at home, which is running Pushcut in the foreground all the time. So it's not your daily driver iPhone. It's a spare iPhone, you know, maybe your previous generation one or something, or iPod Touch is quite popular. There's a large number of folks using those. And it just runs Pushcut all the time. And then it waits, and you can have scheduled things which run, say, every 15 minutes or every day or every 2 days or every 6 hours, whatever, running. And you can also have ad hoc automations triggered by something like Zapier or If This Then That. And these automations can ping your iPhone running Pushcut and run a shortcut. And that shortcut can then do anything a shortcut can do. And especially when you add in apps like Scriptable and so on, it can get super nerdy and awesome. So I've had it creating, you know, a whole series of drafts and OmniFocus projects and folders and stuff because, you know, this thing popped up in this calendar and bam, a whole bunch of stuff just happens automatically thanks to shortcuts. And, you know, I've got projects and OmniFocus and everything just appearing automatically in the background without me ever having to actually lift a finger, because Pushcut is sitting there waiting and going, I can run that shortcut. And the best thing is, of course, because it's shortcuts, I can edit it on another device and then that just syncs over and ta-da, when it runs the next time, it does that. And the brilliance of it coming to the Mac, which, you know, some folks have been asking, you know, like, surely this has to be really easy. It's really not, especially Pushcut wants to do things properly. There's no dodgy hacking around to get everything working. You know, the brilliance of it coming to the Mac is if your Mac is already running 24/7 or pretty much running 24/7, for example, to run Keyboard Maestro macros and deal with Hazel rules and things like that, well, it's already there. It's got shortcuts. The vast majority of apps that have shortcut support on iOS have them on macOS now. Well, there are naturally some exceptions to that, Safari and so on. But this means that then your Mac that's always on anyway can also run Pushcut. And so then Zapier can go, hey, David's Mac, go run this shortcut. And bam, it will run that shortcut. And so instead of having to use, you know, an iPhone or an iPad or an iPod Touch, which for some people may have involved purchasing an extra device before, which is obviously a pretty big barrier to entry, now you'll be able to use a Mac that you already have. And it turns out there's a lot of people who have a Mac that's either always on or pretty much always on to run these things. And yeah, it's going to be very, very useful. Especially when you realize that Shortcuts for Mac has Apple Script support, Keyboard Maestro support, all of those things. So you can run these things, you know, integrated together from, you know, just one tiny little command, which, you know, if this and that make, or even your own webhooks from, say, HomeKit can then run automations on your Mac through Shortcuts.
Yeah, I think taking it to the Mac is going to be really nice. You know, I mean, I think that's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, I think it will as well. And, you know, a lot of folks are really excited about this. They've got every right to be. I'm also very excited about this. So, we'll just have to see what happens. But fingers crossed, everything will continue to go smoothly as the beta process continues and we can get something out for more folks soon.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait, Rose, to get in on that beta, and I can't wait for this to go public. Any idea you think when it'll release?
It's really, really hard to say. How long is a piece of string? It really depends. You know, I've been doing my best to be the most awkward user, you know, finding as many weird edge cases and bugs as I can.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that I succeeded. So it really depends on, you know, how the beta process goes. Obviously, we want to get this out sooner rather than later. We'd rather get it out to people and then, you know, refine and add more features later instead of getting something out with the ability to, I don't know, make a coffee without you having to write a shortcut for it. I'm making things up here because there are a large number of features on the list, but I don't want to give anything away in case people immediately go, I need this. It's not gonna, you know, Roomba around your house for you. Your Mac Studio is not suddenly going to turn into a Roomba, but we can always add that feature later if we can figure out a way to install wheels over the internet.
Yeah, well, I think the fans are probably good enough for the section. I think you got that covered already. let's talk about some personal productivity automations, though. We've got several on our list here, so I think why don't we just start sharing a few?
Yeah, so I've been dealing with quite a few other automations recently. And one of the requirements that I've had for a number of these automations is figuring out if I'm at home. Now, at home comes in air quotes because at home does not mean that I'm physically located at home. It means that I'm kind of in a home status. So it could be that I'm at my home, or it could be that I'm at a number of other locations which can be considered at home. And so on. And so I have to figure out, you know, what does at home mean and how can I determine if I am at home? And I've been playing with a number of things and trying to figure it out. You know, some devices have got GPS, some devices don't have GPS. Sometimes GPS works, sometimes GPS doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. And so I've been working on one singular shortcut that I can use that will help me determine if I am at home, which I can then run from any other automation, because of course on the Mac, even in things like Keyboard Maestro and so on, I can run a shortcut and it can return a true or a false, and then I can check that output. And so I've started refining this, and at the moment it starts by getting my Wi-Fi network, if there is one. And if there is a Wi-Fi network, it'll check it against a list of known networks. And if the Wi-Fi network is any of those networks, then I'm considered at home. And and then it just returns true. If I don't have a Wi-Fi network, it then gets my location. Now, originally in Shortcuts, getting your location was slow. And when I say slow, I mean sit and wait for a while. In iOS 15, this got a lot better. A lot of people were still using the workaround of get the current weather forecast, and then get the location out of that. But the good news is nowadays it's a lot faster. Now, I'm still going with the Wi-Fi network first, just because if I'm on my home Wi-Fi, or I'm on what the Wi-Fi is considered at home, then I know, you know, I'm really at home.
Yeah, that's immediate, right? It's like one or zero.
It's immediate.
Yeah.
But the location is actually still really fast. So if I don't have my Wi-Fi on for some reason, for example, I've recently replaced my TV unit, which involved taking everything in my network down and then putting it all back up again, which meant I had a brief 10-minute period yesterday evening going, oh my God, why is nothing working? Turned out I flipped a power switch in my office and therefore the office was not responding at the other end, but I was really worried I'd broken a cable under the floor. So if the Wi-Fi is not on, then it falls back to getting my location. And it starts by getting my country. Okay, because country, at least for me here in the UK, it's a relatively small geographic region. If you're in the US or, you know, Australia or somewhere, maybe not. But it starts by getting my country. If I'm in the UK, then it will continue. If I'm not in the UK, it returns a false immediately and just done. And then it gets my postcode. So postcode is the UK version of a zip code. And essentially the way that these codes work is the first one or two letters at the start of it are going to be a town, and that's the town that your post gets sorted in, at least theoretically. And then one or two digits after that is going to be a large area within that, and then the final three digits are essentially like the street that you live on. And so I can start by actually just checking the start of the postcode in most cases and just sort of fudge it and say, hey, like, you know, if I am in, you know, say, for example, London 1, that doesn't really exist, then, you know, return true. I'm at home. It's fine. And so I've been just checking the postcode to see if I'm at home. It's because checking GPS coordinates, you can do that. And the way that you can sort of genericize, I'm not sure if that's the right word, GPS coordinates, is you can take a digit off the end. So if you get your exact GPS location when you're at home, and then you, you know, like knock one or two of the decimal points off the end, you know, you're increasing the area quite a bit, the more units you knock off. You can get it with that. But then you kind of have to say, like, okay, well, if it starts with this and things like that. And I was like, you know what, I'll just check the postcode. And if the postcode is, you know, the postcode starts with any of these, then say that I'm at home, call it good enough and done.
Okay. So let me interrupt there. So, and this is done in shortcuts. So what are the actual actions you're calling to choose between multiple different postcodes?
Well, what I've done is in Datajar is, you know, my source of data for everything. I have a dictionary called at home. And then inside of that, I've got Wi-Fi and I've got postcodes. Okay. And each of those is just text and it's just a multi-line string. Okay, so I can have like line one inside of Wi-Fi is the promised land.
Yeah.
Because that's my Wi-Fi network. And then the next network name is on the next line and so on. And so in shortcuts, what I do is I get this variable out of Datajar. And then I say, if this variable contains Wi-Fi network. So if it contains the Wi-Fi network, then it's, you know, then return true. Done. Okay. Now with the postcode, I do split the postcode. So I use a split text section because our postcodes are generally split into two sections. You know, the first part, which is, you know, the postal town and the large geographic area and then the street section. So I use a split text section on that. And then I just say, okay, if this list contains, you know, the split text, then return true, otherwise return false. So that's what I'm doing there. And that is, you know, a very simple way of doing it, but it's much easier than getting a list of items and repeating with each and saying, okay, if this one is, you know, if this is true, stop and exit, and so on. So yeah, I just check if the big block contains the little thing that I'm comparing it with.
Is that, and then are you done at postal codes? What if the...
Yeah. I just stop at postal codes, to be honest. You know, if I'm somewhere without a location, you know, if GPS isn't working and I've got no Wi-Fi, I'm not at home. So I'm just going to return false.
Yeah.
I could get nerdier and figure out, you know, like, okay, so if I'm on a UK mobile network or something like that, but I decided that that was probably going about three steps too far. You know, the chances that I will not have GPS or I won't have Wi-Fi and I'll be at home is pretty low, to be honest. And then the chances that I won't have Wi-Fi and for some reason GPS isn't working to get the address with the country and the postcode is very, very, very low. And if that's not working, don't consider me at home because I'm going to have bigger problems to deal with than that. And honestly, the Wi-Fi network check is usually pretty much enough because a lot of the time I am running this to check, hey, if I should be considered at home, then set this stuff up like this for work. And if it's not working and if it sort of crashes out at some point, then yeah, I'm going to have to fix whatever that problem is before I can start work or before I can, you know, turn my home lights on and off or something like that if I would need to. So yeah, that's where I stopped for the time being.
Yeah. And that was my next question is like, when do you need to know you're at home? What types of automations mm-hmm. are getting triggered?
Well, for example, when my work laptop turns on or when I turn my laptop on into a work mode, Keyboard Maestro triggers a macro. One of the things that it will do is check, hey, am I at home? And if I'm at home, then it'll make sure that the volume is up and so on. So I'll hear notifications and so on as they come in. If I'm in the office, however, then it's going to turn the volume way down so that if I'm getting, you know, if somebody pings, say, a general channel that, you know, everybody who's in the office is also in, I'm not one of the cores of computers making slightly off saying, doo-doo sounds, you know, my machine's going to be quieter. Or if I'm at home, when I get up in the morning, then it's what my phone does is it'll remind me of the habits that I've got in streaks with that are in the morning category. If I am not at home, then it will skip the morning home tasks in streaks so that I don't have to worry about, you know, marking those as done. I'm not going to get prompted for them throughout the day and so on and sure. so forth. So there's a number of things that I'm using this for to make sure that I do things or don't have to do things and just not having to remember to mute my laptop when I'm in situations where my laptop ought to be muted is actually pretty powerful, to be honest. This episode of Automators is brought to you by Vitally. Customer success teams today are facing a problem. How do they connect customer data back to their work? Vitally changes that. It's a new kind of customer success platform. An all-in-one collaborative workspace that combines your customer data with all the capabilities you expect from today's project management and work platforms. Because it's designed for today's customer success team. That's why Vitally operates with unparalleled efficiency, improves net revenue retention, and delivers best-in-class customer experiences. It's the solution to helping your customer success team keep a better pulse on your customers, which maximizes productivity, visibility, and collaboration. You can boost your bottom line by driving more revenue per customer with Vitally. And if you take a qualified demo of Vitally, get a free pair of AirPods Pro. So if you're a customer success decision maker actively seeking CS solutions, working at a business-to-business software as a service company with 50 to 1,000 employees, and you're willing to explore changing customer success platforms if you already have one in place, schedule your call by visiting vitally.io/automators and get that free pair of AirPods Pro. That's vitally.io/automators for a free pair of AirPods Pro when you schedule a qualified meeting. Our thanks to Vitally for their support of this show and Relay FM.
I've got one for you. It's quite simple, but you know, we're going to start simple and get more complex through the show. But I have recently been doing a lot of testing with Apple's Reminders app. You know, we're in beta season, so I always like to try and kick the tires on what Apple's working on. And one of the things about it that I is more difficult than with OmniFocus is capture. You know, the creating a new task isn't as easy as it is with some more powerful task managers. And so I went to a trick that I've been using with OmniFocus for a long time where you can create a shortcut. Any task manager that supports task creation via shortcut, which is just about all the good ones at this point. You can create a shortcut, but the trick is not to just have a generic new task shortcut, whatever your app of choice is, but instead to make the shortcut pre-filled out for the typical things you're capturing, whether it be work or personal or specific projects. In my case, I've got different areas of work. You know, I've got the labs and I've got the podcasts and all these different things. So I have these shortcuts that create new reminders in the right buckets. And I've been doing the same thing in OmniFocus, like I said, but I'm really playing a lot lately with what's the most efficient way to do this. So the actual act of creating the shortcut is very easy. It's a one action shortcut, you know, open OmniFocus, create a new task in the Max Markey Labs project. And then all you fill in is what the actual task is. Mm-hmm. But how, you know, what's the easiest way to trigger that when you're on mobile devices? So what I do is I've got these shortcuts that reside in my dock. My dock only has shortcut choose from menu launchers in it. And so I've got one button for Max Markey stuff, one for personal stuff, one for miscellaneous stuff. And so I used to have just like one or two shortcuts in there, and they specifically launched the OmniFocus capture. But with reminders, I find I need more of them because you really have to do a lot of work to open the app and add a new reminder. So what I've done is I've made another sub menu in it, if that makes sense. So in the choose from menu list, and the way I've chosen to do this is it's running a separate shortcut. So this is hard to explain with audio, but let me just try and step back. So when I click a button in my dock, there's a choose from menu that has like 25 items on it that are various things of my life that I do that I can launch with one tap. One of them says create a new reminder. And in shortcuts, when you do that, it launches another shortcut. That's another choose from menu. And it's got a list of five or six different types of reminders I might want to create. And they're all pre-filled out. And then I tap the one I want, and then I tap in the reminder. So it's three taps, the icon, and then the reminder, and then a specific one, which sounds like a lot of work, honestly, for an automator to get to the item. But just because of the way it's all set up, that's the way I do it. It's been working pretty good for me, but I would like to get it down to two taps. So I'm paying attention to the ones I use and don't use. And if it can get small to be a small enough list, I'm going to put them in at that first level.
Mm-hmm. How are you paying attention to this? Are you just, you know, making a mental note of these things, or do you have any logging in there using something like DataJar or Toolbox Pro's global variables to note which ones you've used?
I'm just noting. I mean, I look at it at the end of the week. Did I ever push that button this week? You know, no, I didn't, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thing. I like, that's a good idea, frankly, to be more focused on it and just really actually count as you push the button, which I guess would, if you did that with DataJar, I guess you would have a variable that you add one to every time you push the button.
Yeah. I mean, there's two options, right? There's either just have a number and add one to it every time, or you could just set it to the date that you last ran it.
Yeah, that would work too.
Because then you can just look at a list of dates and go, well, these ones are really old, these ones are really new, which means also you never have to like reset all of those numbers to anything.
Well, I will tell you, the senility has not taken hold yet. And when I open it, I know which ones I've been using. But there will be other options or other situations where maybe you do something much less frequently, but that would actually be a really good idea. But this is a little automation I've been fiddling with. And the challenge I've been struggling with is, do I want to make it like its own tier, or do I make it, it's, you know, at that first level? I can tell you with OmniFocus, I got to a point where there was only like three of them. They didn't take that many slots on my root directory. And I liked the ability to just tap an icon in the dock and then tap an icon and have a pre-filled task item with reminders. It feels like a lot more, but honestly, I don't know that I'll be using reminders in a few months once Apple ships all this stuff. So maybe I'll just go with it as it is for now, but that's a nice way to handle the problem and the problem to be solved there. And it could be a calendar app or a task manager app or anything where you need to put data in, is a lot of these apps do have the ability to create a new entry with a lot of the data pre-formatted. And mm-hmm. if you're going in the app and every time like filling out the same fields repeatedly, then you're losing time. Then automation can help you, and shortcuts automation in this case is incredibly simple. It's a single action. Fantastical does it. Calendars does it. OmniFocus, Reminders, Things, all of the heavy hitters in the productivity space have usually an action that lets you create a new thing and fill in metadata at the same time. And it does, you get the payoff on creating that automation like the second time you run it.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's amazing how just a tiny little bit of planning and automation can save you, you know, potentially hours of time. I had one, it's not in the doc because you've only just made me think of it. And so I'll get a link so that we can pop it into the show notes. But one of the things that I end up doing in OmniFocus a lot is adding nested tasks. So I might have a task, which is, you know, it's not really a task. It's kind of a mini project or a collection of tasks that maybe need to be done in a specific order. By the way, this thing could be considered done when its children are done. And so I'll need to do something. So in OmniFocus, I'll need to add a child task and then edit the parent task to say, hey, this should be completed when all of its children are completed. And I realized this was taking me a few taps because either I'd have to add a task and then drag and drop it to indent it or tap and hold on it, organize, indent. You know, there's a number of things, but it wasn't the fastest it could be. But edit, select like three or four things that I want to add subtasks to. And then in the Omni automation menu, run a little automation that doesn't take very long at all. And I was able to put together four lines of Omni automation JavaScript, which add child tasks to all of the selected tasks. And it makes sure that the parent task is set to being completed when all of the child tasks are completed. And honestly, this has saved me quite a bit of typing and dragging and dropping, but it's also just saved my sanity of, okay, I need to add like subtasks to six things. Okay, do this, because the child task adds is just, it's not got a title, it's just blank. And that works in exceptionally well for me.
It is fun solving little problems with little automations. And I think we, at some point, we have to come back to talk about Omni automation. It's just so powerful, you know, I mean. It's like the infinite task manager playset, right? You just make what you need. Yeah. Or Sal has already made it and you just download it and install it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing, you know, how many things do use that or do already exist when you didn't actually realize that.
I mean, I'm trying to use reminders more right now because of I want to talk about in the labs and we're in the beta period, you know, so I always do that. But I sound like I'm such a shill for OmniFocus, but it's just, it feels so hard not having that full OmniFocus tool set at my, you know, beck and call.
Yeah, it is really difficult. And it's just one of those things whenever I try using other things, and I do, you know, periodically use other task managers. You know, if I'm doing a crazy complex project with lots of dependencies, you know, that this thing, when that's done, that enables all of these things. And when those three things over there are done, that enables this thing. But when that's one of those things plus these two other things are done, then that enables that thing. Then I'll turn to something like Taskkeed, or, you know, sometimes I'll just make a quick list in reminders or even drafts for things. But, you know, if I want my big project management, I want OmniFocus. You know, I've recently taken to, I know that fake due dates are not GTD. I'm very aware of this, but I have recently taken to, okay, it is today, whatever today is. So for example, today is a Monday. It is Monday. Today, I need to do these things. And, you know, these things are going to be pretty much like the world may not end if I don't run my dishwasher, but I'm going to have, you know, a lack of dishes and, you know, a lot of stuff in my kitchen sink if I don't run the dishwasher. So, you know, I'll have things like running the dishwasher and stuff on there. And so I've worked on a little shortcut recently, which allows me to add day projects to OmniFocus. And so it'll ask me for the date and time as the starting point.
Yeah.
Because the time is very important, because if, for example, I have an acrobatics class and I have to leave for my acrobatics class by 5:45, then the time for the end of day stuff is going to be 5:45. Whereas if I don't have, you know, any classes or anything, then it'll be 10 p.m. I've not yet got it reading into my calendar and figuring out, you know, what time is the end of day, because, you know, it's not that difficult for me to figure it out. And at some point I can automate that bridge if I choose to do so. But it asks me for the date and time. It then formats the date so that it's just, you know, Friday or whatever it is, and creates a new project in OmniFocus in a folder called Daily Projects. And it sets that project to be completed when all of its child tasks are completed. And it gives it a due date of the date that I've selected and the time. So if I put in, for example, Monday 10 p.m., then it'll be due, you know, today at 10 p.m. And then it'll pop up and ask me, hey, you know, are there any things that are kind of like standard things that you may need to do? For example, if I need to do laundry, or if I need to, you know, run the dishwasher, things like that. All of those things, you know, come up as options, and then I can just select them off. This is just a dictionary, actually, in Shortcuts, and then that dictionary, the text values of that are just, you know, either the tasks in or sort of subgroups of tasks in task paper format, and it just sticks it all together and adds it to that project in OmniFocus for me, and that's it. And it's very handy because then, you know, it opens it up in OmniFocus. I can see things, add to things, reorganize things, you know, make certain things sequential. You know, you can't hang laundry up to dry until you've washed the laundry. So, you know, it, you know, things like that end up in the right order, and I can only see things as they become available to me. But it's been helping me get an awful lot done and saving me a lot of time without making my life overly complicated. You know, and if at the end of the day I've not done things, I can either just move them into the next day's project or just delete the project because it was just a get stuff done today thing, which, you know, all of these tasks tend to be just sort of household management tasks. Maybe they should go in a household management project, possibly. But my focus is more getting the stuff done than being perfect about GTD.
Yeah, it really is just an impressive app. And, you know, it's 15 years old now. It's been 15 years since they released it. And this is probably the longest running app of my life. I keep looking for things. Part of me feels like, well, I'm Max Sparky. I should use something different. It's been, you know, time for something new, and I can never find anything. Sometimes I might find something that looks a little prettier, but I never find anything that works better, you know?
Yeah, that is always the thing. It just works for me. And it's very difficult to replace a system that works. You know, one of the biggest automation tips that I can give people is, you know, if things are working and they're working well, find another thing to do instead. You know, instead of, you know, trying to automate something that already works incredibly well. Unless you have nothing but time on your hands, maybe go look for something else to automate instead. You know, if you got plenty of time and you're just doing it for fun, sure. But most of us have got a little bit of a lack of time at various points that we need to address. So we're better off spending that time and focus on the other things.
I talk on the show quite often about setups. I think that's something that's a big deal to me, and historically I've run them through Keyboard Maestro, but I've been playing a lot lately with moving those over on my Mac to Shortcuts. And it's been a lot of fun because, like, there's things that Shortcuts can do now that I never expected it to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of a setup is when you're going to start doing a specific kind of work, your windows arrange themselves for you and put yourself, you know, they put themselves in the right order and where they need to be. It's the kind of stuff that, you know, there's multiple tools for this. I use Keyboard Maestro. Rose uses Bunch. But mm-hmm. I've been slowly, like, exploring pushing this into Shortcuts. And generally, it works. There's a couple tricks I need to rely on in Moom. Like, one of the things you do is you arrange the windows, and Shortcuts does a lousy job at that compared to Keyboard Maestro. And Moom, mm-hmm. Moom doesn't do that at all, but Moom uses a trick. I think Brett's the first one that turned me onto this, where you just run an Apple script on Moom. So you set the windows the way you want. You have Moom run via Apple scripts. You know, set them up for recording the automators, and then the windows all arrange themselves for that. But there's a lot more you can do with shortcuts. Like at this point, you can clear the screen of Windows. You can open up specific apps. And the stuff that I think Shortcuts is really good at this at is like the kind of focus and time management stuff. So like if you're using Timery, you can have it run a script to start your timer. If you're using Timing, you can have it run an Apple script to start your timer. If you're into focus modes, you can have it trigger whatever focus mode it is you need when you're doing that setup. And like all of that like system level stuff, I find is actually easier in Shortcuts than it is in Keyboard Maestro. That's not something that I expected to happen. And I like to be able to just kind of choose from the menu and set the actions up. Like I want to open up OmniFocus to a specific perspective. I can do that now easy enough in Shortcuts with them. Thanks to, you know, the ability to better touch tool Shortcuts where you can trigger a keyboard shortcut when you open it. Mm-hmm. But I have found that it works much better than I expected. Some of the things that are better than Keyboard Maestro is I don't have to deal with the pause command anymore. In Keyboard Maestro, I'd always have to put a bunch of pauses in there so everything could catch up. For some reason, Shortcuts is able to just do this stuff in order. Maybe that's kind of because it's part of the operating system. But I think it's fun. And it's always interesting taking existing automation and switching it to a different platform. Automation platform, just to see if you've got the muscles for it and, you know, what's better and what's worse. One of the challenges I'm facing with this, Rose, is the idea of spaces. You know, like, do I keep separate spaces for different contexts? You know, like in the past, I've done things like have a space that has all my communications apps in it. And then I've had a space where I do work and a space where I do utility work and things like that. And another thing I've tested is Stage Manager, because I'm really into contextual computing and focused work. I would really like to be able to teach it with the basic tools without automation. And I've been struggling to find kind of a formula for that that normal people can use in Stage Manager. I think it would have to be on one space, and Stage Manager, I just don't think is up to it. I just gave up on, you know.
Yeah. I kind of have just given up on automating Stage Manager, and I just open Windows and have Moom move them around. I don't do anything else.
Yeah. So the last week, what I've been doing is I've killed all my spaces. I've set up now separate shortcuts for pretty much every context I work in. And I just reset the screen for every bit of work I do, you know, and I'm calling them via Alfred, you know, just Alfred with the plugin. And so you just type SC and then the name of the setup, and it arranges itself. But it's been pretty stable running out of shortcuts, which kind of surprises me. Once in a while, Moom misses, like it doesn't get the windows arranged right. And the other problem is because I do a lot of recording, I change the screen resolution frequently. You know, for recording, right, I make it a little more text, the text a little bigger. And I have to make sure I've got it in the right display mode before I start running off, because window management gets confused when you open it in a different display than you saved it. But the, you know, this has been a fun automation to work on, and I'm not sure where I'm going to land with this at the end of the day. Maybe I'll go back to using more spaces, but I like to just try experiments on this stuff. And if you have some basic automation skills with Shortcuts, even if you don't own Keyboard Maestro, this is now on deck for you. This is something you could absolutely do.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things where it's always good to, you know, try this with new things, because you may discover new and better ways of doing things than compared to what you were doing before. Because, you know, there's two arguments, right? Never change a running system. If it works, leave it alone. Don't touch it. But also look out for improvements that you can make, because the number of times that you kind of get, you know, not stuck in a rut, you're not even aware that you're in a rut. You just kind of end up just following along, doing what you've always been doing because, well, I can't do that, so I'm not going to try and do that. I'll do it this way instead. And you're missing out on better opportunities and ways of doing things, or things that you didn't realize that you could automate before that actually you can. You know, like instead of just opening Audio Hijack when I start a podcast recording, it opens the right Audio Hijack session for me when I start recording. You know, instead of just sending me a notification to change my sound inputs, I actually have SoundSource switch them using shortcuts, which previously I was doing with Switch OS X, which was a command line utility. You know, and all of these things end up being improvements that, you know, I might not have found if I hadn't been open to the idea of changing to new applications. This episode of Automators is brought to you by Electric. Turning a small business into an empire takes work, and you have to keep your ear to the ground for things that will help you take it to the next level. But this can be hard when your attention is pulled in different directions, because that's the reality of being a boss. The team over at Electric knows small businesses, maybe like yours, face these challenges. That's why they're on hand to help with time-consuming parts of your business, like standardized device security with best-in-class device management software so you can implement best practices across the board and be ready to scale. And employee onboarding and offboarding done for you, saving you an average of 8 hours per request. Plus, Electric will help you keep a single point of visibility into your IT environment to control devices, networks, and applications, while simplified reporting allows you to achieve and maintain compliance, and proactive IT recommendations and automated workflows make IT easy to manage even for non-technical users. And look, if you're hearing this and you think your company could use some of these services, but you're not sure where to start, Electric's expert will guide you through the process of establishing standardized IT processes for your organization. You have to delegate in order to focus on what you're good at. Just because you can do things like manage all of the devices and set up things like device management and compliance doesn't mean that you should. You should be focusing on the things that only you can do. And there's plenty of times where I would have loved something like Electric, and quite frankly, there's times where I still want it, even if it's just my family, though don't tell them. So you should go and check out Electric if you're kind of trying to run a business, but spending more time managing IT than actually doing the thing that you should be doing. And that's probably quite a few of you. For Automators listeners, Electric is offering a free pair of Beats Solo 3 headphones for taking a qualified meeting. Just go to electric.ai/automators. That's electric.ai/automators. Go there now to get your free pair of Beats Solo 3 headphones today for scheduling a meeting. Our thanks to Electric for their support of this show.
All right, Rose, give us another personal productivity automation.
Well, I've been dealing with reminders. So unlike you, David, I haven't switched to reminders to try it out. I mean, I did give it a solid try for a good couple of days. And then I decided that I had too much going on in my life at the moment to actually consider really switching productivity systems, because that's always an endeavor. And so instead, I decided that I was just going to keep playing with reminders, because it's really easy to say, hey, Apple lady, add this thing to blah, blah list, or remind me to bunk. And so I've mentioned this before, you know, I have reminders, you know, when I get out of the car, when I get home and things like that. So anything that I add to reminders, my default list in reminders is called automated processing. Because believe it or not, this list gets automatically processed. Ta-da. It's crazy naming, but I went for the simple but obvious approach. I also have a shopping list. I have a grocery list, because every so often I forget what I've called my lists. And then I've got location as a list. And then I've got to-do as a list. And to-do is T-O space D-U-E, and this, believe it or not, goes into due. And location is for things that have got locations on. Now, when I'm adding things via Siri, I very rarely will specify a list unless it's specifically, you know, shopping or grocery list. And those will get processed. So I have Pushcut running all the time, and it runs a couple of little shortcuts which process my reminders. And it processes my reminders usually about every 30 minutes, because it's, you know, I'll go through a phase of adding a whole bunch of stuff into, you know, reminders, you know, for like, you know, 20 minutes or something while I'm cooking. I'll add a bunch of things and then, you know, and then that's it. I won't add stuff for a little while. So I figured about every 30 minutes is good. So what it does is it goes through and it looks in automated processing. to start with. And if it looks for anything with a location attached to it, and anything with a location attached to it, it just moves this into the location list. Very, very simple. And so if it's in the location list, that's it. It gets ignored from then on. And then it goes back and it looks at the whole automated processing list. And it looks for anything with a time. Okay, so anything that had a time and a location has already been moved into the location list. Anything with a time attached to it, after that, goes into due. Or it goes into to due specifically. To due, because this way all of the things can just get slurped into due at the same time because due watches that list. And then everything else in automated processing gets dumped into my OmniFocus inbox. Very, very simple. But anything on my shopping list or my grocery list gets a little extra processing. Now, I should note, actually, in both automated processing and I have a tendency to say, hey, Apple lady, blah, blah, blah. And then every so often, Apple lady will get, a little bit confused. And so I'll be like, cancel. Hey, Apple lady, cancel. And somehow cancel gets added to my list, whatever list it was that I was adding something to. And now sometimes I do need to cancel things. And that may be something that I say, hey, Apple lady, remind me to, cancel the automated reminder from the management company about the gardening. I don't know. They don't actually send me a reminder. It'd be very nice if they did. If I want to add something with the word cancel in, then this won't trigger. But if anything is just called cancel, if the title of the reminder is cancel, it just gets deleted from my reminders, and then it disappears entirely because that it's not going to be helpful to me. Then the shopping list and the grocery list, they both go through a specific separate shortcut, which is run as part of the process reminders one. And what happens to these is they get added to my grocery shopping list in OmniFocus. So this is a project, and they get tagged. Now, depending on the item, they may get tagged with specific things, because what happens is there are some things that Siri might mishear. Part baked rolls, for example. So you can buy rolls from the supermarket. They are partially baked, and then you put them in the oven and you finish baking them. Very simple. Every so often, Siri adds park baked rolls, like dog park or, kitty play park park.
Yeah.
And this is greatly appreciated and very entertaining, but it can be slightly confusing, especially if I ever hand this list off to another person. They have to decipher what Siri thought I meant. So I have a number of commonly misheard things, which Siri will, or shortcuts rather, will process on my behalf and correct Siri's mishearings for things like that. And some of these are also where I call out, hey, if this thing is this, then chuck it in here with these particular tags. For example, part baked rolls will usually come from any supermarket. But if weed killer is on my list, then it's not going to go onto the general supermarket list. It goes onto the hardware store list, so I can pick that up in the right place. And so generally things get added into my supermarket shopping list, and then it gets tagged with supermarket, or it may get tagged with a specific tag for a specific supermarket. That tends to be rarer. That's for things that I've shared directly into my inbox, and then OmniFocus is running a separate script to automatically tidy up a number of items in my inbox where I've added stuff from particular stores, and it contains this URL, so do that on it, which is what happens right at the end. But this means that all of these things can get tidied up really, really nicely and really quickly, and Pushcut server is just sitting there now on my Mac running every 30 minutes and tidying this up. However, there is a slight problem with this, because what always happens when I'm driving to the grocery store? I think of things that I need to buy. Oh yeah, I need to do this. I need to buy that. I need to buy some more juice or something like that. And so I can say, hey, Apple lady, add this to my grocery list or shopping list. And that's great. But unless I take a very long detour, I am not going to be driving for over half an hour. And so the chances of Pushcut picking this up are pretty low. But, you may remember, David, right at the top of the show, I mentioned Pushcut has the ability to do background triggers on things. So when you get to a particular location, well, when I get to any of the grocery stores and I've set a bunch of them up as location triggers, it runs my process shopping list specifically shortcut, which is one of the reasons why I've got these split up into separate shortcuts. So I can have like general like process reminders, which will include processing the grocery list and the shopping list. But the process the shopping list will just go through those two, and this way it just does that. So when I get to this location, it will run that shortcut for me on my automation server. So my phone's not locked up or being used or anything, because what happens is, as well as that, I also have that location send me an OmniFocus notification. Well, it's not sending me an OmniFocus notification. It sends me a Pushcut notification. But when I tap it, it runs a URL scheme and it opens OmniFocus to not just any list. It opens a perspective specific to the store that I'm at. So, because sometimes there are some things that you can only buy in certain stores, you know, Lidl or Aldi have, offers that run sort of, they start on Thursdays and Sundays and they're available for a few days and things like that. So any of those things that I've added to the list will be in those specific lists. So it'll open a perspective that finds me all the things that for any supermarket and all the things that for that supermarket. And it will show me that in OmniFocus when I tap on the notification that I got because I got to the store. And this has been really, really useful for making sure that I don't forget things and so on and so forth. So yeah, my grocery list got nerdy, very, very nerdy. But it's working for me.
Yeah. I mean, you went all the way in. I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really feel like the, the idea of grocery lists is a great source of automation exploration, right? You know, because I think it's something we all need to do. It's something we'd all like to see be more effective. I mean, Apple has actually made progress on that in the latest betas. If you make a list called grocery list, or you designate a list as your grocery list in your reminders app, it sorts them into the various aisles that they need to be in, you know. And I should have clarified earlier, even when I'm not testing reminders, I'm using it for shared lists. Daisy and I have various stores and things. And I really like the idea of talking to reminders through Siri voice and adding reminders. I think that's the one kind of killer feature that reminders has. But like you, I have it saved to a box that OmniFocus sweeps through, you know, and just collects it for me. And then I deal with it from there. Unless it is something going to the grocery list where I save it directly via voice automation.
Mm-hmm.
What are the tricky parts with your automation? Where does it break? Or does it break?
Well, I mean, I've been working on it and refining it for a while. I did have it originally, like when I disconnected from CarPlay, running the automation to do the sweep and tidy things up and so on. But I found that when I disconnect from CarPlay is a bad idea, because disconnecting from CarPlay, that is the point where your phone is doing weird things with Wi-Fi and so on. And then I go into a building made predominantly of metal, which funnily enough does not have great cell signal. Yeah. That didn't work. So I switched away from using a shortcuts automation to try and trigger stuff, and just went, hey, Pushcut has location triggers and it can just run this in the background. Let's give that a try. And that's been working brilliantly. I think the biggest problem is actually trying to remember what is it that I actually meant when Siri wrote this down. So I've actually started adding a tag to everything that comes in from reminders that is just a little Siri tag. And it's got like the Greek eye emoji on it, which works wonders for just grabbing my attention. If I'm looking at something going, what is this? Then I can just kind of go, okay, well, this was added by Siri. So it may, it's the Nazar amulet. That's the emoji that I'm using. It works wonders for, okay, if I can't figure out what this means, it doesn't immediately obviously translate to something that I'm expecting or the word chocolate, I'm just going to go with, I'll leave it there for now. And if anything, specifically in the grocery list in OmniFocus is there for over 2 weeks and it was added by Siri, or it's got the Siri tag on it and it's incomplete after 2 weeks, I have an automation go in and delete it for me. Because if I can't figure it out in within 2 weeks and it was added via Siri, then yeah, most of these things tend to get added within a few days of, you know, or like the day before I go shopping or something. So, yeah.
I think you're really smart to like consolidate all your task related stuff into one app. And I feel like over time I have drifted away from that in a lot of ways. Like OmniFocus remains my main task manager, but like I said, groceries for me are in reminders. We do a lot of project management in the labs and the Max Sparky stuff I do with the people that work with me. We use Craft, you know, and because it's very collaborative, it's, you know, it's not as powerful as Obsidian, but it, for collaboration, we can at mention each other and we get notifications and it's a native app and does all the cool stuff that you need for collaboration. But I realized at one point that it felt silly working on the project page in Craft and then having a link back to an OmniFocus task list. So like I just started generating the project related task list right on the project page. And it has not caused, you know, cats to live with dogs and the universe to implode. It just, it's fine for that. But I also am aware of the fact that I'm skating out on thin ice as I diversify my tasks into different places. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it is one of the reasons why I have everything consolidated pretty much into one place is because this way I don't have to think about it. You know, if there is a task to be done, I'm going to see it because it goes into the application. And this means, you know, I'm looking at something, you know, on a website and it's like, oh, right, I should pick this up when I go to XYZ store. Well, yeah. I just share it to OmniFocus. And, you know, I have, I've mentioned this one on the show before. I've got a process inbox tasks, OmniFocus. It's an Omni automation. It's an OmniFocus script. And it goes through and it looks at tasks in my inbox and it basically uses the URL. If there is a URL in the notes of that and it can match that up with a store, it will do so. And not only will it do so, it will, you know, then like add the tag, add the project and then done. And this is something else that gets done, you know, with my process reminders, because sometimes reminders end up, well, things end up in reminders and then they get migrated over to OmniFocus and then OmniFocus can just go, ta-da, done. For me, the biggest problem with splitting up my tasks is kind of the same problem that I have with at the moment. I have two different work accounts with which have both got calendars on, and some of them have got you know, some of them are fine in that they like some things I get invited on both accounts. Some things I only get invited on one account, and that account doesn't always refresh and update. And it's like, okay, so what do I need to do? And so on and so forth. And just trying to like, you know that I need to be in this place at this time, or I have a meeting at this time and things like that. If it's not in one place, I'm not going to find it. And if my tasks are split up across three or four different places, I am going to miss some of them. Probably something critical like renewing a prescription or getting my car tax paid or something like that. Don't worry, folks, I've got all of those done. It's just one of those things where for me, splitting stuff up ends up with things not getting done at some point. And it may take a while, but things will fall through the cracks pretty quickly.
Well, I'm definitely paying attention. And if it starts to become an issue, I can change it back, you know, but
yeah,
it's nice when you've got a team where they can see what you've completed and not as well. So
yeah. Well, that's the thing. If you're working collaboratively, having other people able to see what you've done is very important. So yeah, it's one of those things where there is no perfect system to this. So you just kind of have to go with it. But yeah, we'll, as always, see what happens with these things. So yeah.
This episode of The Automators is brought to you by HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/automators50 and get 50% off with the code automators50. I actually like to cook. I love to have a good meal ready for my wife when she comes home. I think it's fun, but you know what I hate? I hate getting the menus, going to the grocery store, and dealing with all of that. With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. So you can skip the trip to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Another problem with me going to the grocery store is I always buy too much of something and not enough of the other. HelloFresh sends you pre-portioned ingredients to help cut down on food waste, while step-by-step instructions make cooking a breeze, not a chore. Did you know HelloFresh offers more than just delicious dinners? It's now easier than ever to skip that extra grocery store run by adding snacks, sides, and more to your weekly order. Simply shop HelloFresh Market and take your pick from a curated selection of over 100 items. So when you need dinner fast, don't call for delivery. Think HelloFresh. Their fast and fresh recipes are ready in just 15 minutes or less. Plus, HelloFresh is 25% cheaper than takeout. Just a couple things I've cooked lately. Chicken sausage spaghetti bolognese. Very good. It comes with zucchini and parmesan. And umami ginger pork bowls. I like to cook Asian food, but I'm never good at getting the spices right. That's one of the great things about HelloFresh. They give you everything you need. And I am able to get those Asian spices just right with their meals. These meals are great because they come out delicious, they're fresh, and they take almost no time to make. I like to turn on some good jazz or a podcast, and I've got the meal cooked in no time at all. Go to HelloFresh.com/automators50 and use that code automators50, there's no space there, for 50% off plus free shipping. That's all lowercase, HelloFresh.com/automators50. Get that 50% off. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit, so go check it out yourself. That URL one more time, HelloFresh.com/automators50 and code automators50 for that 50% off plus free shipping. And our thanks to HelloFresh for their support of the Automators podcast and all of Relay FM. So, Rose, one of the things I think that's important about personal productivity automation is just being aware of the sharp edges, right? When you're trying to work on personal productivity stuff, I think often it's app-based stuff. And a lot of people who want to automate it get lost because they don't have quite what they need. Like when earlier in the show, I was talking about for doing setups, how the aha moment for me for shortcuts was when I realized I could run an Apple script to arrange my windows using a third-party app. And I just wanted to take a minute to call that out, that concept that if you are facing a problem with shortcuts or Keyboard Maestro or anything that you're trying to do personal productivity automation on, you need to look sometimes beyond the obvious solution. Because for a lot of people trying to automate stuff like this, the solution is out there. It just takes a couple extra steps. One of the big ones I would like to call out is Apple Script. You know, if you're working on the Mac, there's just so many problems that Apple Script will solve for you with a little creativity. I have several examples here, but I'm going to start with one. I like to, when I mentioned earlier, I record a lot. So when I decide to open up a short recording session, one of the things I do is I change the resolution of my screen. Well, that is a pain in the neck. The way Apple makes it, you got to go to the display setting. You got to go find a little button. You got to click on it. It's very human intensive to switch resolution. And I know people listening might be rolling their eyes, but it is. When you want to get to work, you want to get to work, right? And I tried to Apple Script that forever, and I never could find a way to do it. I even asked Sal Segoyan, the master of Apple Script, and there really wasn't a good way to do it. There was some UI scripting of the display preference, which is, if you're listening, it's just as complicated as that sentence sounded, and it's not consistent. And then I figured out, because I started looking at apps, and one of the apps I downloaded was Display Menu. And I was looking at the website, and they said, well, if you pay us $5 or something to get the pro version, you get Apple Script support. And it's like the light bulb went off, you know, and it's like, oh, wait a second. So I can Apple Script display resolution using a third-party app. So to solve the problem, what I had to do was I had to get a third-party app, in this case, Display Menu, and then figure out their Apple Script implementation, which they do a pretty good job of explaining on their website. And then I can reset a resolution with an Apple Script call. Now that I have that, It's a one-line code of AppleScript. And I'm not sharing this so you guys all can change your resolution. Very few people need to do as often as I do, but this is an example of the way I solved the problem. And now that I've got that little snippet of code, I save it as a text expander snippet. I can dump it into a shortcut. I can dump it into a keyboard maestro. I can dump it into script editor. I can do anything I want to run this. And I've got it set for both the resolution I want to record and the resolution that I want to work at, you know, so I can change between the two of them. And now I'm off to the races. Anytime I want to automate that process, I have it implemented across the board. And this is a problem that was on my mind for years. You know, it sounds silly, but it was. I just wanted to automate that screen change. I hated every time I had to open that display box, and now I don't. But the trick was to keep your mind open to oddball solutions to this automation problem.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like the way that you dumped it into a text expander snippet. What I would probably have done is actually just put it into a shortcut or an AppleScript file.
Yeah.
And then just always run that, because then if I ever need to change it, then I only have to change it in one place. But at the same time, you know, you're probably not going to need to change that very often.
You know what? I'm going to do that. That makes way more sense. I'm going to switch that.
Yeah. This is something I often do as part of my automations. It's like, oh, I'm going to do the same thing in multiple places. No. I'm going to put this in a mini sub automation, and I'm going to run the mini sub automation in all those places. Because then if it breaks or if I need to change something, I change it once and it's done everywhere.
Yeah. And what really has happened is I've installed this into multiple scripts for different things I do, screen setups, recording things, and it just works without me having to think about it. Another example of kind of going outside the normal box is the little clock in the upper right corner of your Mac on the menu bar. Mm-hmm. For years, you were able to turn that off or on. And, you know, most people wouldn't care and they would leave it on 100% of the time. But if you're recording, you don't really want a digital clock up there, because sometimes you make a mistake and you have to reset something. And then if people are watching the recording, they see suddenly 10 minutes just dropped off the universe, you know. And there's not an ideal fix for that, because now it has to be there because of the way Apple has done the sidebar.
Yeah.
But what you can do is make it more obtuse. And if you switch it to the analog clock, it's much less, you're much less likely to notice that the analog minute hand jumped a little bit than you are to see the digital hand jumped up 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to easily change that. And again, you can do it manually. You know, there is a set of steps you go through. And this is even more tedious than changing the screen resolution. And one day I did it for the last time. I said, this is enough of this. So I just did a Google search. How do I change the clock on the Mac, you know, with a script? And I found a shell script that does it, and it works great, and it toggles it. So if I want to go between analog and minutes, it does that. And again, I've got that thing spread all over the place, and it's just a little thing I call. Now, there is no automator or shortcut action that does this. There is no keyboard
maestro. You can run a shell script through shortcuts or keyboard maestro.
Yeah, well, that's my point, is like, but there is no built-in native action to do this. It's too niche. Apple's never going to make that. But once I got the shell script, then I made a shortcut action and I made a keyboard maestro action. And so now I've got like one more little thing in my bag of tricks of automation I can use. So I feel like it's like, and that's kind of the extreme end. And if I lost you in that, you're like, I'm not going to do shell scripts. You're going off the deep end, Sparky. There's a flip side of this that's equally important, and that is using built-in selection and keyboard shortcuts in apps that don't have actions, right? You know, if you've got like an app that I really like, that I've really come to like a lot, is the screenshot replacement called, I always forget the name, CleanShot. Yeah, CleanShot. CleanShot has a bunch of really impressive features that it adds to the mix. Like one of it is hide desktop icons, you know?
Yep.
And if I'm going to record, I want to hide desktop icons. Well, and CleanShot has the ability to custom program your own unique keyboard shortcuts for everything it does. And like, that's a responsible app made by somebody who gets automation. And so what I did is I just gave super obscure keyboard shortcuts to all the stuff I want to do in CleanShot. And now I can call those as part of a Keyboard Maestro script, or using Better Touch Tools keyboard action, I can call them in shortcuts too. So like now, instead of going and get a shell script, I'm just using a keyboard shortcut, but it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a bonus or an unrelated but useful little trick that I'm going to just mention for folks. Because you mentioned the date and time, and this reminds me of something that I thought that I came across, I think it was on Lifehacker years ago, but it's been very useful. It's not as useful anymore because it turns out my Mac doesn't crash much nowadays. But if you go into system preferences or system settings, and then you go to the clock options, which at least in Ventura under Control Center, and then clock options, there is the option to flash the time separators. I recommend everybody turn this on. It is relatively unintrusive. It just means that the colon between the hour and the minute flashes every second. If your Mac freezes, you will be able to tell because you can just stare at the time. And if the colon doesn't disappear and reappear every second, then you know that your Mac is frozen, like frozen. And then, you know, you force restart it or whatever. But that has been a lifesaver for well, maybe not a lifesaver, but it's certainly been very helpful to explain to my dad, hey, look at the time. If the colon doesn't disappear and reappear, your Mac is okay. You don't want to force restart it. You know, try quitting the application instead. Because he, for a while, I discovered that he was just, whenever Photoshop stopped responding, he was just force quitting it, like force shutting down his Mac and restarting it, which it did fix the Photoshop problem, but I was slightly worried he was going to kill, you know, his machine by doing that too often or cause a corrupted operating system. So yeah, little bonus trick for folks there. But yeah, it is always interesting, you know, trying to find different solutions to these things. And it's amazing how many things, you know, can be solved with a line of Apple script that you stole from the internet. I want to give a shout out as well, actually, to FastScripts, because FastScripts can run any script. It can run shell scripts, it can run Python scripts, it can run Apple scripts, and it lives in your menu bar. It's just a little script icon that lives in your menu bar, but you can have it, you know, show you different scripts and open the scripts in different places. And things like that, you can trigger it from a shortcut. But because you then have those scripts available in you know, all the places, then you can just reuse them. So I put a lot of my general scripts for things like, you know, open iTerm with this profile and this profile split vertically. iTerm is an alternative terminal app that I use, and profiles are, you know, like different setup, so you could have different colors, it can highlight different things when they appear on screen, etc. And so, you know, having it open two of those, you know, split vertically is really useful. And, you know, I have, you know, some generic scripts for things like that, and they just live in my file scripts toolbar. So if I just want to, you know, run those, it's right next to Bunch, and I can just do that.
You know, Rose, for like, I don't know, 25 years, I've been looking at that setting with the flashing colon between, you know, the hours. Yeah. And I've always thought that would drive me nuts to have that blinking at me all the time. And I just turned it on while you said it, because I've never had it on in all the years I've owned a Mac. And yeah, it's not that bad. It doesn't bother me.
No. It's one of those things you would really think that it's very bothersome, but because it's far in the top right-hand corner, it doesn't have to be. And you know, you can pretty much ignore it, but it's very useful if your Mac crashes, because you'll be able to just stare at a time and know everything's okay. It's working. Or at least the Mac is fine. Mac OS is fine. There may be other problems, but Mac OS is okay.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a question that may cause some controversy.
Oh dear.
12 hour or 24 hour clock?
24 hour clock.
Yeah. Okay. That gets me in definitely trouble 24. Over here. I think a lot of Americans prefer the 12-hour clock, but I don't know why. It's like it's
such... for me, it just completely removes the ambiguity. You know, you ever wake up in the morning and you're like, "Oh my god, did I like sleep through a whole day or something?" You know, that it happens every once in a while, right? If I also had 12-hour clocks in my life, I think I would continually wake up and go, "Did I sleep through a day? Did I sleep through a day and a half?" You know, because I have blackout. blinds and curtains and everything. So my room gets pretty dark. So, you know, especially in summer, like 8 a.m., 8 p.m., it's the same amount of light.
The real problem is when you set an alarm and you have a clock that has a.m., p.m. on it, that's one more variable. Like if, you know, mm-hmm. if you set your clock for 7, but you didn't catch that at 7 p.m., you're going to sleep in tomorrow, you know, because
yep.
your clock's not going off until 1900. Yeah. I don't know why more people don't use 24. I think in Europe, it's more common to use a 24 hour.
Yeah.
Clock.
We Is pretty right? much default to it. Yeah. It's just incredibly useful. And also it removes the ambiguity. You know, if the train leaves at 1907,
yeah,
you know, that's 7 minutes plus 7 in the evening, and you don't need to worry, wait, was it 7 a.m.? You know, or anything like that, you know. It's the same with flights and things like that. It works. And I mean, the other thing is it really, you know, it helps with date maths and in automations, you know.
Yeah.
Like yes. 2 hours before 2 p.m., it's 12. 2 hours yes. before 2 a.m. is midnight.
Yeah. Yes, it allows you to avoid mistakes in automation. It gives you 2 more characters on your menu bar. Because that's 2 less things you have to display. Oh, okay. The other thing, do you put seconds up there too? Please tell me you don't put seconds.
I don't put seconds up there. That for me is a little too much. I have briefly tried it, like on and off for little periods of time, and it just doesn't work for me. I actually don't have macOS display the date for me either. Because I've been experimenting, and I'll have to get back to folks on a separate show about this, but I've been experimenting with a few different apps that will put like meetings and your calendar into your menu bar. Obviously, Fantastical can do this, but specifically I was looking for like a meeting-based one. And they often display the date.
Yes.
As part of this. So, because there's... Meter, M-E-E-T-E-R, is one that's in setup that I've been playing with. But there's a couple. And the fact that those show, like, the date in your menu bar means I don't have macOS display the date because I have that display the date instead.
We may have to come back someday to time-based automation because there's some really great tools out there now, and it has definitely been evolving. One announcement on this, I feel like I have, because I have Shortcuts create a lot of all-day events, and it seems like they finally got that bug fixed where it actually creates an all-day event when you ask it to, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that is good. I don't think I ran into that too often, but it was certainly problematic when I did. So I'm very glad that is gone because, yeah, wow. Yeah, it's crazy how much like a little something like that can really break you. At work recently, a different person started creating meeting days or meeting calendar events for office days,
yeah.
And they're titling them and saying the location differently, and it just broke me. And it broke my Shortcuts as well. I had to rewrite like 3 Shortcuts, which is how I ended up pulling something out to become like one Shortcut. This is how you figure out if it's a work like office day calendar event. I just put that in one central sub shortcut that I can use everywhere else. But oh gosh, yeah, that was crazy while I was trying to deal with that.
I'm a big fan of planning calendars. So a lot of times I have Shortcuts generate all day events for me, which go into the planning calendar. And for a long time, it was very iffy as to whether or not that was going to show up. But it's generally fixed now.
Mm-hmm.
We're the Automators. You can find us at relay.fm/automators. Thank you to our sponsors this week, Vitally, Electric, and HelloFresh. Thanks so much for listening to the show. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.